Welcome to the Lou Cutino Show, where we can learn to reimagine our lifestyle.
Dr. Shashank Joshi, it's a pleasure, privilege to have you. I've never met you, but I've heard so much about you. We've had tons of our patients visit you and say only the best things, make changes. You know, your name first came up when someone came to me, was a patient from America, Indian American, and said that, hey, Luke, you know, I came to Mumbai for a treatment. I met Dr. Shashank Joshi, and he also spoke about lifestyle. You know, so I said, okay. So she saw I was surprised. She's saying, in the US, mostly no one speaks about lifestyle. We're given meds, and we're never told to sleep better. We're never asked about our exercise. And that's the first time I heard your name, and after that, we've been following your work. It's a pleasure to have you. I'm going to ask you to introduce yourself, but for everyone else right now, we are here with a Padma Shri winner awarded by the government of India. 0.25% in the world, top-ranked cited research scientist, and there's so much more. He's the dean of a college. He's the leader of this amazing program that caught my eye, Diabetes Remission, through artificial intelligence and his personal vision to make India, which is the diabetic capital of the world, diabetes-free. So, doctor, over to you. I mean, number one, why did you get into this profession? Number two, please take us through everything that you've been doing over the last couple of years.
So first of all, Luke, thank you so much for having me over, and it's a delight and pleasure, and I have to thank you and Mugdha. And I think I'm an endocrinologist. I'm Shashank Joshi. Endocrinologist looks at endocrinology, metabolism, molecular medicine, nutrition, and I'm basically a physician. I'm a doctor of physicians and internist at heart. And I'm passionate about clinical care because we are all here with a single goal to make people live their lives better. We have 8 billion people on planet Earth. And we have more than 1 billion+ people who have pre-diabetes or diabetes, 500 million people with diabetes. And so that's my primary area of work. And that's all driven by obesity. And then, of course, we have all myriad of endocrine and hormonal problems. So the idea is that I got into medicine because I think medicine is not a mathematical science. 2 + 2 is not 4. It could be 3, it could be 5. And therefore, it's a probabilistic science. And it's based on a curve called normal curve, which is a Gaussian curve. So we always do things at 95% confidence limit. And but it's a science which involves just not mathematics, but mind, body, and soul, all the three put together. And that is why lifestyle is the key cog. It's not about just giving a prescription. It's all about a holistic approach, an integrative approach, a platform in which we have to not just heal the metabolism, which is a specialist, which I am, but it's beyond that, the mindset, the behavior, as well as the overall, you know, human body, mind, and we have something called as a soul as well. So it's important that medicine gives you a window to get into all this. See, we have engineers who can program devices. Mm-hmm. Like we have seen the change in technology today, but can we marry the two? And can we try to help people disease-free? And I think, therefore, I think medicine gives you a unique opportunity or platform to make lives of people better. Of course, we need to give medicines. That's for example, right. Somebody has type 1 diabetes. Their pancreas beta cells don't make insulin. And they need to take insulin for life. But can we make them happy? Mm-hmm. Can we make them healthy? Can we keep them complication-free? So medicine allows me an opportunity to serve people. So my God on the universe is people living with diseases, how to make them happier and healthier, and how to use a lifestyle as a core component in management of diseases beyond just medications. Because medications are important, right. But with medications, getting them the right mindset, keeping them happy and keeping them healthy is equally important. Because you can have somebody with the right numbers, but if they are not happy, you're back to square one. So, you know, I think we have that common DNA, you and me, Luke, that we are here for people, mm-hmm. and make them happier and healthier human beings.
Doctor, I love what you said about, you know, medicine being a window. It's a crutch. It's needed. But along the way, you change lifestyle. You spoke about type 1 as a fantastic example, but we've seen some of your patients as well. And patients from around the world with type 1, they're on insulin for a lifetime. But those who run, who look after their health, they can actually minimize the amount of insulin they take over time, although they still need it. And that's the importance of lifestyle. Doctor, what you said about happiness is so important, but it brings me to a natural question that the medical fraternity around the world, right? Today they focus on medicine, and a lot of doctors like yourself also focus on lifestyle. How come it's not uniform? And I can say the same thing about the nutrition world. Sometimes nutrition can behave very much like allopathy, just symptomatic based, but they don't talk about happiness, they don't talk about the soul, they don't talk about mind, body, soul. It's only about eat this food and you'll get better. So what do you think's broken this, you know, continuity of seeing the body as a whole? And I know you're doing a lot of education in your own way, which is available to the world to educate them on nutrition. But where can we fix the major system? Because I know you were on Prime Minister Modi's Mann Ki Baat as well during the lockdown, where he interviewed you on your opinions of the pandemic, what could be done for people's lives, health, what they could do in a preventive measure. So, doctor, what's your take on all of this?
So I think, Luke, you touch a very important point that when you go to a doctor, you expect them to write medicines mm-hmm. and not expect to talk on lifestyle. And when you go to somebody like you, a lifestyle guru, then, you know, you are expecting them to only give them advice. And, you know, I'm very happy that you tell them to continue the medical treatment. Mm-hmm. That's so important.
Absolutely.
Okay, because I think we are complementing each other.
Yeah.
And I think the reason most doctors are overworked and, you know, we are having a shortfall of specialists mm-hmm. and experts, and everybody is domain centric. So people don't view everything in a holistic perspective. So, you know, we just prescribe medicines, but we need to have teams like support teams of lifestyle experts, coaches, mm-hmm. mind coach, a diet coach, activity coach, an image coach. It's as important because it's about holistic well-being. So I think that treatment specialists or medical doctors, we need continuity of care. Mm-hmm. We all are overworked, but we need to spend that extra effort to make that human, to ensure that he feels well. And in that piece, getting the right mindset, getting the behavioral change is as important, because otherwise people won't adhere to the medicines.
Right.
You know, the minute they become okay on their numbers, they tend to drop off the medicines. Mm-hmm. And I think in compliance, continuity of care, I think there has to be a perfect marriage between lifestyle and medications.
Beautiful.
And I think only then we can get a complication-free world, and we can have happier human beings and healthier human beings. And health and happiness goes together. Mm-hmm. So I think it's my job to train and do capacity building in my profession, which are my medical specialists. And it is important that we invite people like you to talk to them, so that the relevance of ensuring that there is a common pathway, so that you can make people behave and make a change. See, you all are also the change makers. You can make them feel fit. You can make them feel empowered. And sometimes we don't have that time, but you can give that little extra bit of time
right.
to make that little correction on the lifestyle part and make them a simple construct, whether it's a simple dietary construct or maybe a sleep construct or mm-hmm. a physical activity construct, or just maybe overall keeping them a little more positive, because there's importance of positivity in life.
Absolutely.
You know, we see so much of negative clutter. The other challenge is that the little skepticism which comes, nutrition is a black hole.
Correct.
And evidence based on nutrition is very controversial. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we rely heavily on the internet and the various search engines mm-hmm. to get information, which is often not evidence based and not filtered through a chain of evidence based medicine. So I think it's important to recognize that you go to the right experts and get the right advice. And I think that is where the skepticism comes. But I love your concept that we all need to partner and work together mm-hmm. because we all have a common goal, and the common goal is to make people healthier and happier.
And, yeah.
And I think therefore, I think it's important that we work together. And I think, as I said, that there are 8 billion people on planet Earth, 1.4 billion people live in India, and we are probably the largest population on planet Earth now, and they're getting wealthier and better. But the price we are paying for a growing economy
yeah.
is health.
Absolutely.
And lack of time. So I think even doctors are overworked mm-hmm. because specialist care access is difficult. And in that limited time duration, the access is available, then the time spent is focused on the disease, the diagnostic test and the treatment. But around that, we need to build an ecosystem mm-hmm. which will be holistic in approach, integrative and lifestyle in approach, exactly what you do. So I think, you know, we need to fix the plug and fix the system. And therefore, I think, Luke, what you do is equally important, because you are an empowerer and trying to fill up the external environment and the internal environment. See, because it's important that person who's participating in a medical treatment is under distress many times.
True.
And, you know, you can be a big key to open the positive cog and relieve that distress by just, you know, making them feel good, making them a little more fit. You know, you are part of Prime Minister's movement on Fit India movement, I'm told.
Yes.
And congratulations for that.
Thank you.
Because we need a fitter India. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, there's no point to have a wealthier India if it is unfit. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, and if it is fit India, we can prevent diseases. Yeah. You know, we are more than overburdened. And I think, you know, the good doctors are the ones who prevent disease, mm-hmm. not who treat only end stage complications. And it's so important to do that. And therefore, you know, it's important that we recognize the need to work for a common goal, as long as it is scientific and evidence based, and as long as we do it right. I'm so happy that you said that people with type 1 diabetes need to take the insulin.
Yeah.
But they need to be empowered, and they need to be fit, and they need to feel good, and they need to keep their numbers right. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, we have to be enablers to ensure that we get our people living with diseases, make them better human beings, better souls, and keep them live longer.
Absolutely, Doctor. Doctor, what you said was really powerful, but I want to talk a little bit about nutrition, because you are right.
Absolutely, you know,
you have to constantly unlearn what you've learned before. What I learned when I did my food science, technology and nutrition many, many years ago has all changed today. And I think if people are not willing to learn continuously and change, it is a black hole. And the second thing that nutrition also doesn't look at is the person as a whole. You know, today nutrition is looking at extremes like, okay, carnivore, everyone's carnivore, vegan, everyone's vegan. And it's okay, you can choose to be what you want, but what we've based our practices on, our practice on, is bio-individuality. For the last 9 years, we've not seen a single patient who is the same and requires the same kind of diet, whether it's diabetes, Alzheimer's or cancer, because of their metabolic, you know, buildup, their metabolic makeup, their genes, whether they're carb efficient in the morning or carb efficient at night, the kind of workout timing. So you are absolutely right. And we just feel that continuous learning is so, so important. You spoke about type 1 diabetes as well. And what we've seen the impact, I mean, all our patients are on medication. We're in integrative medicine. We're not alternative where you choose. Although sometimes we have terminally ill patients where there is no more chemo and radiation. And then, of course, we want to have a scientific outlook at Ayurveda, homeopathy and other fields of medicine, because there is no allopathy and the patient wants to live longer, and that works pretty well as well. But it's never a choice. We've seen with the focus on mitochondria for type 1 diabetes, how amazing their management of insulin becomes over time. And that's incredible to see that they need insulin, but it can be reduced and the doctor slowly reduce it because of that. You had spoken about mitochondria when we were speaking before. Doctor, in simple ways, can you break down mitochondria? What is its importance in every aspect of the human health and lifestyle with medicine for mitochondria?
So let me, Luke, give you a clarification. Mm-hmm. Type 1 diabetes needs insulin for life.
Absolutely.
And mitochondria are our energy powerhouses. These are mm-hmm. small little organelles inside the cells. And mitochondria make us breathe, and they have a respiratory apparatus. And they are the true oxygen of our body for every cell. Because every cell has a metabolism. And the metabolic clock is ingrained in the mitochondria. Mm-hmm. So the seat of the insulin resistance, which is the main problem which occurs with hypertension or type 2 diabetes or heart disease or fatty liver or this whole cardiometabolic conundrum which you are talking about, is all seated in the mitochondria. Mm-hmm. Because you're very right, we are very carbocentric. We eat too much of carbs and fats, too little proteins.
Yeah.
We don't do any physical activity. We don't sleep well. And I love your point that just giving a dietary advice as a prescription is not sufficient.
Not sufficient.
It has to be holistic. It is something in medical language we call it precision medicine or personalized medicine. Mm-hmm. See, every human is different and unique, yeah. and has its own DNA or has its own molecular or mitochondrial signature. And therefore, it's important to recognize that signature. And for that, we have technology. We have diagnostic tools to recognize that. And once you make that fingerprint, then deliver a personalized solution. Mm-hmm. The reason, Luke, you're successful is you're able to identify the small little cogs between biological clock of a human being. Somebody is an early riser, somebody is a night owl. So, you know, you're able to recognize that and do that correction. Somebody is a small sleeper. Somebody is digitally intoxicated. Somebody eats too much. Somebody has a very sedentary lifestyle. So it's important that it's not just a single prescription of saying eat less and eat right. It's not about just what diet sheet you give. Mm-hmm. It's about eating slowly. Because if you eat fast, you're contracting out, you know, beta cells very fast. And then you're pumping out more insulin. And you're making that beta cell fatigued. And eventually when the beta cell fatigues out, you will actually fail. And then you will need insulin.
Correct.
So it's important to eat slowly. Eating slowly, eating on time, eating less, and then eating right. But eating is not the only thing. It's all about ensuring that you sleep well for at least 5 hours or not beyond 10 hours. Yeah. Ensuring that you don't have a sleep apnea. Mm-hmm. Ensuring that you do at least 10,000 steps and do some resistance exercises and also focus on need. Because of our exercises, for Indians, it's not 30 minutes, you know, for 3 days a week. It is 60 minutes. We are, you know, thin fat Indians. We have a lesser muscle mass. Mm-hmm. Evolutionary, Luke, as Indians, we have one of the largest pools on the world on type 2 diabetes or on heart diseases because evolutionary, we are a fasting and feasting country. Mm. You are talking about the nutritional dogmas. And we love to fast, we love to feast, and we love food in general. Mm-hmm. And it's very addictive. Food is as addictive as any other addiction.
Right.
And therefore, it's important to not just be mindful of eating, but it's equally important to ensure that these erratic food patterns, mm-hmm. and through which a lot of these food fads have got generated.
True.
And then they become a dogma. You know, it becomes mm-hmm. like a fashion statement. So Luke Coutinho said that today, you know, do intermittent fasting. Mm. So then everybody will go on a fad.
Yeah, we see that happen.
And we create a wave. Yeah. But actually, every human which you see needs a different personalized approach. And I love that philosophy of yours, that you need to fingerprint that human being, get a construct or a signature in terms of diet, in terms of eating habits, in terms of physical activity, in terms of sleep, and then his mental health. And then make the construct and give a solution. And probably one of the mantras of your success, probably what I can predict, is that you are able to deliver them a personalized solution, spending a lot of time researching on them. And many of us try to do that from an evidence-based world. We are trying to actually see a holistic way, can we deliver that solution?
Right.
I think because as humans, you know, you need to sometimes, we are so burnt out. We are, you know, the world is going through a burnout. Mm-hmm. And we are so burnt out that we have got diseases. Yeah. And we only waken up when we get a disease, when we get a major disease like a cancer or a diabetes or a heart disease. So I think the wake-up call has to come much earlier. The wake-up call has to come and you need to change lifestyle earlier. So mitochondria is the seat of the disease. Mm-hmm. And in mitochondria, what happens? Mitochondria is where the carb and the fat oxidation comes in play. And the biological clock is ingrained there. So we have to ensure that we are able to burn our fuel efficiently and not make the cells sick.
Right.
See, when the cells become sick, you get disease. If the cells get sick in the beta cells, you get diabetes. If they get sick in the brain, you get dementia. If they get sick and they stop multiplying or forget to stop multiplying, you get cancer.
Cancer, yeah.
What is cancer, Luke? Mm-hmm. Cancer is all about normal cells are supposed to multiply. Mm-hmm. And at a particular time, they are supposed to stop multiplying.
Correct.
When the cell forgets that it has to stop multiplying, you get cancer.
Yeah.
And then it spreads all over the body. It's important that the signals which are going on there, they are all mediated through endocrine signals or metabolic signals or chemical signals. Can we make an environment, micro-environment, which changes that. And that is all holistic. So if you are able to make those constructs early on, no, then we will not get these dogmas.
Right.
But we are filled with myths. And I think one of my goals in life is to demystify it.
Beautiful.
The reason, you know, I appreciate all the work you do, Luke, which is fantastic, is you have a reach to people. So through you, I want to reach to everybody.
Oh, absolutely.
And you are like our lifestyle guru, tell people that wake up. Don't wake up to get a disease. Stay healthy, stay happy, and try to be fit like you are. You are a role model for people. And be happy like you are. You are so positive in your energy. Your vibration is so good.
Thank you.
You know, so it's important to recognize that. Then you can have a healthy life. And even if you have a disease, and even if you are in the worst phase of disease, never lose hope.
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah. Because there is something for us. We come with a purpose, mm-hmm. and we go with a purpose. But always be happy and try to keep yourself pain-free. So I think another thing which is important is that I get very anguished, you know, because of pain. Because I saw my own father pass away with cancer, and the reason I really appreciated your work of the charity work also which you do on cancer is you're helping people who are underprivileged with cancer, and I appreciate Luke for all you do and congratulate you for that, is because you're committed to cancer. And I saw from 2007 to 2019 my own father, you know, go through cancer. And I saw the agony and the pain. And the only thing which touched my heart was I wanted him pain-free. Mm-hmm. You know, you may have the best of medications and access to best of radiotherapies or the actiniums of the world and the nuclear molecular targeting which we have. But eventually we have to keep that person pain-free and keep them happy and get their goals set. So I was very happy that at the end stage of my father's life, he was able to write the book he wanted to write.
Oh, wow.
And he could release that book. So it's very important to give them the end goal. Hmm. And therefore, I really appreciate all the good work you do for people living with cancer and also for the charitable work you do for people who are underprivileged with cancer. So that's amazing and fantastic. So congratulations for that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Your words are like music to my ears when you talk about, you know, the holistic approach. You spoke about sleep. You spoke about happiness. You spoke about purpose. Because we've seen that in all of our cancer patients, you know, I mean, you have cancer patients who are miracles, you know, they're fourth stage, there's nothing left, but they're living on and on. And when we look at our data of these cancer warriors, they've had the best doctors, nutrition, everything, but the commonality is happiness, purpose. They've had purpose, they've had that will to live. And we've had patients with a stage zero deteriorate. Literally a stage zero because they have no purpose. They believe it's all over. There's no hope. I love that you picked out that word hope. Doctor, you've been so successful across the country, the governments, the prime minister, the world. You know, you speak about hope, you speak about happiness, you speak about fulfillment, all of these things like powerful drugs that go with medicine. It's established. We need medicine, we need lifestyle. And if we can marry the two, there's a possibility that your own doctors may reduce your medication because guess what? You've addressed the root cause and you're getting better. Number one, what's the name of the book that your dad wrote about?
It was on trade unionism.
Oh, wow.
And,
okay.
You know, because he founded a course on trade union.
Okay.
And he was looking at, are they going to get extinct, you know?
Wow.
Because, you know, there is poverty in the world still. And people have the biggest fear people have in the world is insecurity.
Mm.
And what is the biggest fear most people have, common people have, is will they lose their job?
Will they lose their job?
And trade unions were born from that stem. They were like a security around people's livelihoods.
Wow.
Because we all live to have a livelihood.
Yeah.
And livelihood is linked to our job. And our job is linked to, in the good old days, there were trade unions which protected your jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So that was his book. And the other one was based on human resources. How, you know, a modern, you know, human resource for modern living in this era. Because now things have changed. We are in a digital age. We are connected virtually with the world.
Mm-hmm.
So our whole construct of the world has changed, and COVID actually post-pandemic we are seeing that we are living in a different era, you know.
Yeah.
Suddenly in the last 2.5 years it has been a disruptor.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been a major disruptor on planet Earth. You know, suddenly we are seeing that the longevity has got a little plateaued, people are having more diseases.
Mm-hmm.
And people have disrupted treatments. So again, Luke, through your medium, I want to appeal to everybody that if you have any form of disease and you are taking medications and if you have disrupted medical care, go back to your doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because it's important to recognize the continuity of care. You know, it's important to recognize that do your numbers. Don't be in a denial mode. People are also in a denial mode.
Yeah, true.
Mm-hmm. And it's important to break that deniality.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we have that insecurity within us and we have the fear.
Yeah.
So a second thing which is important, which my father wrote, was that we need to break fear.
Mm-hmm.
Because human, you know, mind is all about fear. Whether it's fear of death, or fear of a diagnosis,
mm-hmm.
or fear that I will have to do a lot of restrictive things in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, if you want to have freedom from fear, we should embrace fear.
True.
And get the right advice. And that's very important.
No, that's amazing what you said, you know, and for everyone listening to this, I mean, I think it's amazing. Like we always say, the intention of the podcast is just to empower you with expertise, science, knowledge, and you decide what changes you need to make right now, wherever you are. Doctor, you made a very good point about the mitochondria and India being protein deficient and muscle. And we see that connection genetically and with people's disease. So the mitochondria, most of it is stored in the muscle, like the heart. And so the more muscle we build, and we're not talking about you got to become a bodybuilder. We're talking about just lean muscle, exercises that challenge the muscle, increases mitochondria in the human body. So I'm so happy that you spoke about the relevance of mitochondria with even exercise and sleep. We spoke earlier about the circadian rhythm, and Dr. Shashank has written a paper 30 years ago, and circadian rhythms and the way of living are just being spoken about now over the last couple of years ago. Dr. Shashank, when it comes to circadian rhythm, timings, I love what you said about eating on time, eating slow. I mean, these are the basics, and to hear a doctor speak about it, like I said, is music to my ears. Doctor, in your practice, I know you have this vision of making India, which is the diabetic capital of the year, remission, which means type 2 diabetes can be put into remission. What are some of the observations that you see from all of your patients over the last couple of years? Like, what are these changes that people have to make? And please, it is very important to understand the continuity of healthcare, because we have a lot of patients who decide to suddenly drop off medication because they've read something about alternative treatment. And they don't even inform the doctors that they're stopping the medication. And they explore and they come back with the disease full blown. From a thyroid, now it's become diabetes, it's become fatty liver. So it's very, very important for you to understand that, like Dr. Shashank says, fear, all of us have it, but ask questions. One way through fear is by facing your worst fear, by asking questions, gaining the right knowledge from experts and not from just the internet and people around. Because if you just stop your medication, we've seen people who are like, very difficult to fix them after a while, because there's so much of damage done to the body by stopping medication. So we would love to work with you to spread that message, doctor, at any given point. Now, your observations on India as a country, we know there's genetics involved, and there's also this excuse of people saying, oh, my grandfather had diabetes, so I'm going to have diabetes as well. And we all know that in some cases it's highly, highly genetic, but the balance, 95 to 96% of cases, it's purely lifestyle. So what are your observations on some of the things that India can do better when it comes to diabetes, any endocrine disease like thyroid? Your observations, doctor, and advice.
So, Luke, you should be our brand ambassador for prevention of diabetes. Because India is that we are thin fat Indians.
Yeah.
We have more body fat composition. So, Luke, you are trained in Queens. So, in Queens and in Brooklyn, Professor Harold Lebowitz had a student called Marianne Banerjee. And what Marianne did in the early 90s was published a paper on thin fat Indians.
Mm-hmm.
She had Caucasians or whites from US, in New York, in the Queens area. She had African Americans who were from the Queens area. And she had the migrant Asian Indians from the Queens area.
Mm-hmm.
And she studied their body composition analysis under the mentorship of Professor Harold Lebowitz, a world guru in diabetes. And what she observed, that the Caucasians or the African Americans, 27% of their body was fat. But when it came to the Asian Indians, 37%, and these were healthy adults,
wow,
between 20 and 40, were fat. So we genetically, mm-hmm, are thin fat Indians, because what happened, we used to have famine and feast.
Yeah.
And for famine, we stored our fat. So when we evolved, we had this thin fat Indian phenotype. So we have less muscle, and we were agrarian. So we were always active on our fields. We never had seats to chair. We used to sit on the ground. The thrones were only there for the kings and the queens.
Mm-hmm.
So we never had diseases. Why the diseases like diabetes have cropped up is because we have become very, very sedentary.
Yeah.
We have got intoxicated to a television screen or a gaming screen or a mobile phone, or we are addicted. So we have become sedentary. We are not building our muscle at all.
Mm-hmm.
And we are eating too much.
Yeah.
And that excess food of carbs and fat is not good enough. So we have sarcopenia. Sarcos is muscle. Penia is less muscle.
Mm-hmm.
And to exact opposite of sarcopenia is Lucutino. Okay. You should see him. If you can be him, you can be diabetes free. You can be complication free.
Mm-hmm.
Because diabetes stems from the fact that we are having less protein intake,
yeah,
and too much of carbs and fats.
Mm-hmm.
And You're very right about the biological clock. You should have a large breakfast, moderate lunch, light dinner, or maybe, you know, whatever you want to do, you should do it through a circadian rhythm. You need to sleep appropriately. The late owls are the ones who have challenges. So it's important that if you build your muscle, and muscle strengthening exercises are so important. And therefore, you know, you should help our International Diabetes Federation, Southeast Asia, which I was a past chair of, that you need to tell people that they need to build their muscle.
True.
Because the more muscle Indians will build in their body, they will live longer and they will have less diseases like type 2 diabetes, hypertension, heart disease. So it's important that in the Fit India movement, building muscle mass of Indians is very important. Because if you look at South Asia or East Asia, which has the largest pool of diabetes on planet Earth, it's all because of a lean body mass has come down. And it's all linked to our protein intake. So having a little more proteins, whether you're vegetarian or non-vegetarian, doesn't matter. Right. But healthy, good sourced proteins compounded by proper physical activity to build muscle. So, you know, that is the mantra. And I think, Luke, you are the brand ambassador for that because you really know and you can empower people how to build muscle correctly. Because, you know, if I say it as a doctor, people will look at me. But if you say that as a lifestyle guru, people will look at it and they will build muscle. So it's important that we all need to work together because, you see, we have 1.4 billion people in India. We are the second largest pool of diabetes in the world. We are the largest pool of type 1 diabetes in the world. And by 2045, we are headed to become the largest country in the world with diabetes. We want to be the diabetes care capital of the world. We want to prevent people from getting diabetes. And for that, building muscle is very important. Getting the right messages of prevention is very important. Doing yoga, doing pranayama and surya namaskar, eating less, doing physical activity, eating the right food, having more proteins and less carbs. Just simple things can lead to remission. And now you asked me a question on remission. We are doing randomized controlled trials in remission. We are using artificial intelligence and using, you know, digital body twins, whole body digital twins, to create a digital twin of the human body using artificial intelligence with researchers from IIT Madras and from California. And we are trying to make a construct of precision medicine to see whether we can do remission. Now, remission, everybody cannot go through remission. If you are a type 2 diabetic, you have 10 years of duration of disease, and you are on medications, under medical supervision, we are trying to get you reduce it by giving them a holistic approach.
Right.
And we are not just doing it in India, even in California, even in United States, we are trying to use a molecular fingerprinting using artificial intelligence. Because you see, artificial intelligence has its advantages. It gives us a map of what you are. But the solution ultimately is on the human body. You know, your mind has to make that decision. So I think, you know, Luke, it's very important that, you know, you need to transform India. And in that changing India, which is a digital and a skill developed India, building muscle in the Indian DNA is very important. And it's all seated in the mitochondria. Right. So the muscle mitochondria is the key for good health in India. And I think, you know, building muscle is so crucial. So, you know, you need to empower Indians to get and maybe give them a 1 minute tip how to get good muscle in their body. Also remember, as you age beyond 40, when all the diseases start coming in India, you know, you start losing muscle fibers and they get replaced by fat. And keeping the muscle fibers intact or having more muscle as you age will allow you to age gracefully or even reverse aging. Now, reversing aging is a good different topic of my research of longevity. But I think muscle and mitochondria inside the muscle is a seed for good health and is a seed for keeping you disease free, or at least if you have disease, to keep you more healthy. So that's very, very crucial to important.
We're going to get you back on longevity alone, Doctor. There's so much to learn from you. Doctor, I love your vision on, you know, a diabetic-free India, and if there's anything we can ever do to support that, because prevention is what we want to really, really focus on. But Doctor, that also, you know, brings me to an important point. There are a lot of people in our country right now doing all these fad diets and trying to lose weight so quickly for whatever reason, but they lose muscle mass along with that. And it's usually water that you lose first, then muscle mass. And a lot of people don't really reach down to burning fat or losing fat or reducing their fat percentage. And that's why the whole concept of thin fat Indians really, really makes sense. A lot of people come and say, hey, Luke, but I'm thin, but my weight is great, but I still have diabetes and other metabolic syndrome diseases. Doctor, you gave us great tips on how we can start looking at diabetes differently from a preventive model, as well as if we have diabetes. Coming to you, you know, I want to go back to that point where you said doctors are overburdened, doctors are... I don't believe that's entirely true. I know they're overburdened. That's an established fact around the world. But then there are doctors like you who make time to educate people, who make time to constantly learn and look after their own health as well. So I believe it's a choice. It's easy to blame the system. It's easy to blame Mumbai traffic and say, oh, I'm in traffic for 2 hours every day and that's why I can't work out. But there are people who are in 2 hours of traffic and they find time to work out. So it becomes a personal choice. And I'm a huge believer that if we don't prioritize health, like it's not our goal. Like, you know, we always give an example. If we give everyone a Rolex or something, you don't have to motivate them to look after it. They look after it for a couple of days maybe because it's valuable to them. So if we get people to value their health, automatically they don't need to be motivated. They don't need to be told all the time, exercise, eat well. It comes naturally because it's part of our value system. You speak about spirituality. Doctor, were you always in the spiritual line or did your practice get you more and more into spirituality? How do you integrate spirituality with your practice, with your patients? Love to hear from you on that.
So look, two great points. One is you have to practice what you preach. Mm-hmm. And I'm a firm believer in that. And when there is a will, there's a way.
Yeah.
So time management is a huge challenge. Mm-hmm. And if you saw me 30 years back, I was very irritable, short-tempered, always struggling for time. And was difficulty in managing time. Mm-hmm. As I evolved, I think I'm able to handle time better and prioritize things better. And I've realized that I can treat only a finite number of people. But if I educate a larger pool of medical doctors, healthcare professionals, including you, and then go to lay people, you are able to make a bigger change in people's lives. That's the first thing. Second is, I think my evolution in spirituality came from personal experiences and my encounters when I was at the JJ Hospital building a medical intensive care unit where I saw death. When you see death, and I talk to people who survived death, so these are called as near-death experiences. And when I interrogated them and interviewed them and I asked them, what is it that you felt when you were nearing death? And everybody had a different story to tell. And that is the time I met, and I never knew about, so I went to St. Stanislaus, then I went to Ruparel, then I went to Grand Medical, I did my endocrinology at KM Hospital, then I went to United States. I never got an idea of my own religion. You know, the parish I was St. Peter's, so I knew a little bit of Roman Catholics, I knew a little bit about, you know, Islam, I knew a little bit about Hinduism. And I believe that all religions have a common DNA, all religions have a common God, and all religions are ultimately looking at evolving the soul, you know. So I heard one of our surgeons, Dr. Nagargatti, talk on the chapter 4 of Bhagavad Gita. And that was inspirational to me. That was Karma Yoga, which means we are born in era where we are supposed to do what we are supposed to be born for. And that was very inspirational. And I took a cog from there and I actually started reading my own scripture, which was taught to me by my father. He was a Sanskrit scholar. But I never realized the meaning of it. See, reciting something without knowing it reflexly is very different. But understanding the meaning of it is very different. You know, chanting a Gayatri Mantra has a lot of healing. Chanting Om has a lot of healing. It's done with a purpose.
Yeah.
It has a lot of biological basis behind it. And as a researcher, I started investigating into it. When COVID hit us, again I saw death. And that rekindled me to do a docudrama, and I currently continue researching on near-death experiences. So as we evolve, we are all ultimately souls. Human body is only a construction of that. And therefore, I got involved a little bit into the spirituality part of it. Secondly, you may be physically completely fit. You may have the best diet, nutrition, muscle. But if you are not happy, if you are not satisfied, if you're not grateful, if you don't write a gratitude diary, your purpose of life is lost. And through some personal upheavals, you know, and by personal coaching, I understood the need for getting myself happy and trying to spread happiness around. So I think as much as we have to be health ambassadors of the world, I think we have to be happiness ambassadors of the world. And I think a happy India, it will be a happy world, you know. And I think one of the reasons, Luke, you know, I love your philosophy is because in success of health, happiness has to be one of the most important targets. Mm-hmm. Health parameters are all biological, but happiness is beyond biology. Happiness is emotive. Happiness has to be beyond cognition. And I think, you know, cognition is important because, you know, our biggest problem is impulse control. Mm-hmm. But I think if we don't keep people happy, and happiness is our connective to, you know, whether you call it moksha, whether you call it nirvana, whether you call it solace, whether you call it, you know, gratitude, there are different constructs to it. And philosophers are all over the world, whether it is the Greek philosophy or the mm-hmm. Roman philosophy, or whether it is the Hindu philosophy, or whether it is the Islamic philosophy. All philosophers have a common pathway. And I am a firm believer that I am understanding my religion better now. You know, so I think it's a path of evolution. When you see death closely, and when you talk to people who have seen death closely and who have missed death and have survived, mm-hmm. they get a survival instinct. See, human beings are all survivors. Correct. They are all survivors. You know, in India, there's a new word called jugaad. You know, in India, the best jugaad is on planet Earth. That's why we are successful. I strongly believe in India. India is going to be the superpower of the world.
Me too, I believe.
You know, yeah. You know, Europe was a power probably in the 18th century. Mm-hmm. 19th century was all of the Americas mm-hmm. and the Russias. And it's Asia and India which is arriving in the 20th century. Yeah. So we really are going to be a superpower. So it's important that if we don't meet our happiness index correctly and are evolved and, you know, evolved souls, it's very important. See, there are two types of people. You know, and I'll use a little lingo here. There are trupta atmas and atrupta atmas. Trupta means satisfied souls. And atrupta means unsatisfied souls. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, I'm grateful to Almighty that I can speak with Luke and talk to y'all. So I'm grateful and I'm happy. I don't have any ulterior motive in talking to him because he's trying to reach all of you out, whoever is listening to us, to make y'all healthy and happier. So I'm a happy soul. So is he. But if you are all the time grumpy and negative and, you know, despondent, you know, that's not on. That's that you need to break that.
Absolutely.
And I think you need a chain breaker. And Luke is one of those chain breakers. You know, he if you can break that cycle of your life and try to evolve as a better human being and a happier human being. And for that, you know, you have to break some vices. So I think spirituality tells you how to beat jealousy, how to, you know, you have to become a giver. We are misers, you know, we store everything. You store fat, okay, we don't spend it. So, you know, that's why we become obese and get diseases. And similarly, we store money and we don't relish it. Okay, we need to spend. I'm not telling you to go and spend out. But at the end of the day, if you spend energy or spend for yourself and love your own self, it's important to do that. You know, we love everybody around us, but don't love our own self. So I think spirituality taught me all this. And it's evolution. It's a phase over the last couple of decades. I learned it and I learned from everybody. You know, like for example, from you, I learn. I want to put on some more muscle like you are. You know, I'm a real thin guy. So, you know, I was ostracized. So don't ever get destigmatized. Don't feel negative. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm thin, I'm proud to what I am. You know, I used to have image issues in the past. And I must honestly confess in front of all of you all that when I went to school, I was a very lean and a skinny child. So, you know, you do get stigmatized sometimes. So break that stigma. So, you know, we need to recognize that when we look at death very closely, you know, don't look at the negative side of death and fear of death. We need to switch gears from a negative environment to a positive environment. Because if you are cheerful and positive and you are a truptatma or a satisfied soul mm-hmm. and you are grateful that we are happy, that we are talking to each other, helping each other out, you know, it's a one world, one family. And we all live on one planet. We are the G20 leaders now. And I think our mission should be Vasudevam Kutumbam, which is one world and one family. And therefore, it's important to spread the message of positivity, the lotus of positivity. And it's important to recognize that when we are spreading the lotus of positivity, mm-hmm. you know, every human being will have good things and bad things. Yeah. Look at the good things and cultivate them. But if there are bad things and bad habits, and habits die hard, they say. Mm-hmm. And the reason, Luke, you are a bigger transformational agent than a medical doctor who's practicing medicine is because you can change a habit. Because that's a tough one to crack. And I think that is where the construct comes, the motivation comes, the positive energy and the flow comes. And that's very important and crucial that in life, if you want to make a change, you need to break a habit.
True.
And breaking habits are difficult. So keeping the good habits is tough. So don't get into the temptation modes of breaking your good habits. And breaking the bad habits are tough. So look at people like Luke and try to look at some of us to empower you to handle those bad habits better and then manage diseases better. So that's our goal. You know, our goal is to live long, live happy, live healthy, live pain-free.
Doctor, you know, beyond just being a fabulous doctor, I think you're an amazing person. I mean, it's not easy for someone to come on camera and talk about, I used to be an irritable person, an angry person, but what you've just given us again is hope of evolution. There are too many people out there trying to be perfect all the time and trying to be good, but you've evolved from what you honestly admitted. And, you know, we all have that. You know, I have anger issues. I get irritated with small conversations that don't make sense. But over the years, we evolve. And like you, I learn from my dying patients because we have terminally ill patients and the best lessons in life. You say I'm positive. It's only because of the lessons I learned from my patients, because you realize what's there to be negative about. When we know death is real, when we know that there are people dying with regret, those are the most powerful lessons for us too. While we all have some amount of unhappiness or negativity in our lives, we get to choose. And that's why I always say happiness is a choice. We can choose to focus on the negatives and make that our story every day, or we can choose to be satisfied or focus on the little things that are going well for us. And honestly, it's a choice and where we choose. But thank you for being so generous with that information. Doctor, you've given us so much of information, empowerment for us to think where we want to start our journey when it comes to health, spirituality, how we can integrate it with what we do every single day, our practice. And if you're struggling with any endocrine problems, I mean, you're speaking to one of the busiest doctors in the world, probably scientists doing way beyond teaching people on nutrition. Doctor, talk to me about the Padma Shri. I mean, I have to ask you about that. That is such a prestigious award, the government of India to recognize you in your field of medicine. So can you tell us a little bit, you know, how did you feel when you got that award? You know, there are a lot of people out there who aspire to get these awards. What was that differentiator in you besides being such a fabulous doctor?
So I think I'm grateful to government of India that they recognize me. But you know, when you get all these awards, you know, you generate a lot of jealousy within your own companions. And,
true.
I never aspired for it. So sometimes it happened by accident.
Yeah.
It inspired me more. So I think let me talk of the positives.
Yeah.
It has a lot of negativity around it. People think that, oh no, he's a big person and all that.
Yeah.
But I'm a very small, ordinary human being. I'm a daily wage earner.
Mm-hmm.
And, it actually humbles you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I don't need any more awards.
Mm-hmm.
I think the satisfied patient is my biggest award.
Right.
Somebody I can pick up who was looking for a solution. If I can provide that solution, that's my biggest award.
Yeah.
These awards motivate us to do more for our own country.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what the awards do is they make us do more work for our own country.
Mm-hmm.
So my school outreach, my tribal outreach, my adopting my village, to do more empowerment in people who can't make that, all that, it motivates us. So I'm very proud as an Indian. I'm born in an era where I'm proud to be an Indian. And I think I'm very proud that I can do something for Mother India. So I think that's very important. So these awards make you feel that nationalistic spirit.
Yeah.
But ultimately, we are born in one world and we are all living in one village. You know, internet has made it so different that I think we are in one universe. But I think these awards do help you to get you more motivated and recognized. But as I said that, yes, there was a feeling of happiness and elation.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think you pay a price for everything.
So how did you manage that? How do you cope? Because, I mean, obviously, everyone who climbs the ladder, everyone who is successful has people waiting to pull them down. The crab mentality, it's huge. How do you manage negativity in your life?
So I think I've stopped judging what others think about me.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's important to recognize that there comes a stage in life that I really don't bother too much about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I have to meet you and talk to you,
mm-hmm.
you know, I did call up Mugdha, beautiful girl, and ask her. I never seen her. I have never met you. And I said, do you have a dress code? And she was so comfortable. She says, Luke believes in doing what you are and there's no dress code for today. So that's putting you at ease and comfort.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one thing which is very important in life. That, every person around you should have some comfort and ease around you.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, if you build up a dogma around you, it's a very tough dogma to break.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that in the past I had that and I'm happy that, you know, that dogma is broken now.
Yeah.
And it's important to make people at ease. They relate to you, Luke, today because they are able to connect with you. You are able to look at, you know, their death pearls of wisdom, you know, their regrets of life, and then those are real pearls of life, you know, because we all make mistakes. We are all human.
Of course. Yeah.
So if you don't make a mistake, it's not, you know, it's not a big thing. But recognizing that mistake and correcting it is important.
It's important.
And living the right path is very important. So I think I'm grateful to whatever blessings I have got from my patients and people around
lesson.
Me. And I think, you know, the only thing which I want is now blessings from people around me and positivity. I think these awards are there to come and go.
Yeah.
But it's important that they are good motivators.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they are far less important than the people who see gratification once they feel better when you have given them some solution. And I think those are the biggest awards. So I love what you said, Luke. The small little things in life are more important than those big things in life.
True.
And I think that's a big learning experience for me.
No, doctor, thanks for sharing that. For me too, sometimes when I feel low and people say, what's your coping mechanism? It's just reminding myself of all the blessings we get from patients, people who say, well, hey, you changed our life, or families who come and say, thank you for this. And that's the best feeling ever. I mean, we also like other stuff, like a nice holiday and stuff, but these things are so deep. So thank you for sharing that. Doctor, I'm going to ask you one last question before we reach the end. We agreed on bio-individuality, uniqueness. Fasting has become a fad today. At the same time, it's therapeutic when it's done the right way. Everyone's different. You can't say people need 16 hours. Some people do well with 12. Some people do well with 18. And it can change every day because the human body is dynamically changing. What's your take on fasting? I did read a lot of powerful work that you had done on fasting and diabetes. We're huge proponents, but done the right way. Today, we're even seeing data where you don't really have to fast every day. If you have an early dinner and you're keeping 12 to 14 hours between your next meal, which is natural, people are waking up with fabulous blood sugar levels. And then you have people who start fasting at 1 a.m. in the morning because they've had late dinners, alcohol, and they have the worst, you know, sugar levels when they break up, you know, break their fast the next day. What's your take on fasting and your advice to the audience to see it in a holistic way?
So I think you're very right, Luke, that my prevention mantra is very clear and it's in public domain.
Mm-hmm.
And 2011, India lost the first rank to China in diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the president of the largest diabetes society of India called RSSTI.
Mm-hmm.
And we are doing the Mahakumbh back in November this year. And my mantra is very simple. Eat slowly, eat on time, eat less, have a large breakfast, moderate lunch and light dinner, or skip it.
Yeah.
You get the right apparatus. Okay. Do at least 10,000 steps, do yoga, do pranayama or Surya Namaskar, build some muscle, talk to Lukutino for building the muscle. Okay. Sleep well and sleep on time.
Yeah.
Sleep well and sleep on time at least for a good 5 hours. Try to sleep at 10 o'clock if it's possible.
Yeah.
Okay, and try to sleep for at least 7 hours. That's the biological need.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, smile.
Yeah.
Because if you do all this and don't smile and you're grumpy, you will not be healthy. So I think in fasting, in biology of fasting, from all the research which I have done, I've learned, it is important to individually design a protocol for every human who has a disease. And if you don't have a disease, that's the mantra I told you. Just start eating slowly, try to eat on time, and try to be mindful of what you eat. See, food cooked in every Indian or global household is different.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, it's important to recognize that moderation is the key. Caloric control and carb control is the key. It's not just important to do the right kind of a formula or an intermittent fasting formula or a keto formula. All these formulas are fads. And they're designed with a purpose under artificial situations. Keto diets were designed for epilepsy and fits.
Yes.
Okay.
Brain cancers.
Intermittent fasting was designed for something else.
Mm-hmm.
But the simple mantra is eat less, eat on time, eat slowly, eat right. Okay. Try to do physical activity, build some muscle. Try to ensure that you sleep for a good 7 hours. And at the end of the day, smile. So that's all I have to say.
That's a holistic prescription, one of the most powerful ever. Doctor, since we're on, you know, I'm just going to add a quick point, the CGMS monitors. Okay, they're fantastic, but that's also becoming a fad because people just look at the immediate spike and anything that you eat will spike your blood sugar levels, but they don't really go into looking at what's happening 2 hours later in the spike. What's your take on CGMS? Because I know it's messing up a lot of our patients psychologically because they message us, hey, I ate this and I got a spike. And we're like, talk to us 2 hours later. So your professional take on CGMS monitors, and also if there are any cautions that you want to give to people, because it's now become a product in the market that everyone's slapping on and saying, I can't eat this, I eat this, and they're missing the fundamentals of what your prescription just gave us.
So CGM models are only for people living with diabetes. Mm-hmm. They are not for people without diabetes. So a lot of people attach to their bodies, and that's not correct. They are not a Fitbit. Mm-hmm. Okay, remember, they are not a device to measure your activity. They measure interstitial glucose, and they are designed for diabetes only or pre-diabetes at best.
Right.
But not beyond that. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, they measure interstitial glucose.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, they have a lag. And number three, they are not validated beyond diabetic. So they are not validated for normal population.
Mm-hmm.
So don't make your decision making tree based on a CGM value, based on the spike of sugar which you have. Okay, because your beta cells, if they are robustly working and normally working, okay, that interstitial up and down will give you a directionality, and it is not necessarily accurate. And there are disease states and drugs which you take sometimes which interfere with this. So it's important to recognize that and also remember that the CGM has to be done with a swapping mechanism. There is no validated mobile app for it, because a lot of people, they actually have integrated with their mobile device.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not validated at all. So remember that. I love the question which you asked me, that this CGM device, and the company may not be happy to listen to what I'm saying,
mm-hmm.
is only designed and approved for diabetics, for people living with diabetes or pre-diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
And it measures the ups and downs better. It is programmed for safety. So it shows, overreads the lower sugar values, and it underreads the spikes.
Mm.
And it is only designed for people with diabetes or occasionally for pre-diabetes. So it's not a valid tool beyond that. And it should never be integrated on an algorithm of an app, because they are not validated, time tested to randomized controlled trials.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And this comes from Dr. Shashank, rated 0.25% of the top scientists in the world. So while there's a whole audience out there that's always behind science, here's the real science coming from a scientist who's ranked 0.25% in the world. It makes absolute sense. It's just creating more and more confusion in people. And when we're looking at the data of people who do not have diabetes and use this, they actually just become reactive to spikes, and they're missing the fundamentals of what your holistic prescription are. Dr. Shashank, thank you so much for this. I could go on talking to you, and we're going to get you back again and again, subject to your time. But thank you for your generosity of information, the realness of who you are. This is way beyond medicine. And I think this is such an empowering session, just not for me, for everyone else. What's really got my heart is your vision to make India, you know, diabetic free. And if there's anything me, my team can ever do to support you, you have our, you know, undivided or, you know, our complete support. But thank you for your time. I know how busy you are and where all you need to be after this. But it's a pleasure, Doctor. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much. Pleasure's all mine.
Stay tuned for more. We're going to continue our journey, learning, sharing, and evolving.